Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our Bet 365 triple option feature. Hey, you ready to go party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the first weekend of Jazz Fest. Today's password is alligator. That's alligator. Now go to WWL.com/contest, enter that word, alligator, and register to win. It's that easy. Don't miss your chance to win Jazz Fest tickets plus round trip Jazz Fest Express Shuttle passes. WWL is giving away a pair every day this week. All you have to do is listen to Tommy, Newell, Scoot, or us here on Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest password of the day to see amazing artists like Chris Stapleton, John Batiste, The Killers, the Robert Cray Band, Heart, Rebirth Brass Band, and much more. Good luck and happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. Charlie, we had a texter send us some information on Trey Murphy as a starter. And those numbers are pretty strong.
Yeah, so we got a text saying, this is from 3449, Trey Murphy played better as a starter, it seemed. Is there a stat on that? So I went and looked it up. And then he said that he found an article that they were 10-3 with Murphy as a starter. So that was back in March, though. And that was before Brandon Ingram got injured, and then Trey Murphy was just back into the starting lineup for about 10 games. So Trey Murphy has started 23 games this season. Let me actually read out his regular season stats before I read out his stats as a starter. This year, he averaged 14.8 points, 4.9 rebounds, 2.2 assists, and he shot 44.3% from the field. As a starter, those numbers jump up a little bit to 16.3 points, 6.3 rebounds, and 2.6 assists in those 23 games as a starter. To that 10-3 point, when Trey Murphy was a starter for those games that they lost at home, you know, that 1-5 like stretch in the six-game homestand that we lamented so much, Mike. But then he was also a starter for those four games on the road. And that's kind of what I wanted to highlight a little bit here. In the last three games that they played on the road against Portland, Sacramento, and Golden State, this doesn't include that game against Phoenix because that was the Zion show, right? Trey Murphy was awesome. 31 points, 27 points, 24 points in those three games. In total, he shot 24 of 43 from the field and 17 of 33 from three-point range. So better than 50% in both areas. And then against LA in the last two games when he was coming off the bench, 11 points, 4 of 8 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3, 12 points, 5 of 10 from the field, and 2 of 6 from 3. So the numbers really kind of fell off those last two games against the Lakers with him coming off the bench. He was playing more minutes, but it seems like he's a little bit more aggressive when he's in the starting lineup. So with Zion out, we talked with Aaron Summers about it, like who needs to step up, the outside shooters. And you imagine that Trey will, in fact, replace Zion in that starting lineup because, once again, he has started 23 games this season for the Pelicans in replacement for some injured starters and some guys sitting some games and stuff like that. And in those games, Mike, he's been more aggressive. He's scored more points. He's gotten more rebounds. He's having a career year, by the way, as far as picking up boards. And it's really kind of shown up late in the year. And he's also, you know, he lets it fly when he gets those minutes. So
he sure does.
I mean, the Pelicans need him desperately to step up with Zion missing time.
Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Mike in Mid-City. Mike, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, what you at, Mike?
Yes, go ahead, hey. Mike.
Hey, Mike. First off, you know, I would be the last one the question you're supposed to ask me, okay? But on this one right here, I think you're just wrong about teams not holding back in situations that would help them easily get to the championship or get to a championship.
So you thought the Lakers held back last night?
No, I'm not saying that they held back. What I'm saying is I disagree with you that teams will hold back. No, obviously they didn't hold back last night, yeah. And it's going to be to their detriment.
So yes, not, it will.
They right. They're not going to beat them. But I recall the situation back when Russell Wilson was a rookie, and the 49ers had a chance to win a game, and they would have been hosting Seattle. But they did not want to host Seattle at home. They'd rather for Seattle to go play Atlanta in Atlanta. And Russell Wilson almost won that game. But the 49ers, they'd rather that to happen that way rather than to play Seattle because they know they couldn't beat Seattle. And that's the year that the San Francisco made it to the Super Bowl that we had hosted that year.
Yeah, that was with Kaepernick at quarterback, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, they held out some starters in that game, in that particular game, if my memory is right about that. So that particular part is one thing, but I think knowing what was on the line – Man,
it's also a little bit different.
It's a little bit different of a play-in tournament and who you're going to play in a football game, in a one-game type deal. I think the thing was, man, listen, well, let's just win and get in. I think that was the thought process with the Lakers. I think it was the thought process with the Pelicans. Now, late in the year, we see a lot of teams, or we have seen in the past, NFL teams – sit starters, because of the injury part. Now, you could maybe tie into the fact, well, maybe part of that was who they wanted to play. But, man, when those guys get on the field or on the court, they're giving you everything.
Yeah, and that was kind of our point, Mike, was we were receiving texts yesterday from people
that
Lakers were going to take a dive and let the Pelicans match up with Denver. If you watched that game last night, you're going to try and tell me that Zion didn't want that playoff. You're going to tell me that LeBron and the Lakers didn't give all they had at the Smoothie King Center last night to make sure that they made the postseason. Like, looking aside of their matchup against Denver, where they've struggled against Jokic and the Nuggets for actually the last couple of years now, they still wanted to get in. They didn't want to have it go to this winner-take-all game that now the Pelicans are stuck in. So I understand your point about the NFL playoffs and stuff like that. It's a little bit different.
And who you playing, because you're already in.
Yeah.
Okay, you're already in at that point. That's different.
The play-in tournament just adds a whole other kind of, I guess, angle to it, you would say, that, you know, both of those squads just wanted to get their postseason appearance.
Yeah, I think both of them wanted to punch the ticket. They wanted to,
easily.
Because it's a little bit different situation, and we've seen it, especially in the NFL, expanding now to 17 games. And I think in my lifetime, and very quickly, you'll see it expand to 18. That late in the year, you're going to have some people saying, you know what, you know, I'm going to sit a starter or two or three or four, because I want to win come playoff time, and I already have my ticket punched. But in this spot, man. Both teams wanted those
tickets.
There
was so much on the line.
And it didn't really matter. And I agree with you, Mike. I think to their detriment, who they play next.
Yeah.
But they wanted to get in.
I don't know, Mike. It's going to be an interesting series. I don't think it's a sweep like was last year.
No, I don't think so.
But maybe it's a six-game series. Maybe, I still would take the Nuggets in that matchup over LeBron and the Lakers.
I definitely would take the Nuggets on that point. Thanks so much for the call, Mike. Really appreciate it. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 in our Inside the Draft segment. It's brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettillo along with Charlie Long in studio, and it's part of our Inside the Draft feature, and is brought to you daily by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. Charlie, we've talked about this before. You know, those first three players are all going to be quarterbacks. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. Now, some people believe Drake will go before Jaden, but it'll be those three. The big question mark is where J.J. McCarthy fits into this, because there'll be a team that I think will trade up in the top five for J.J. McCarthy, but which team will be that way? Will it be the Vikings? They have the ammunition to do it. Will they move up? Some speculation about Denver. I don't know how much ammo that they have unless they're willing to trade away Patrick Surtain. I don't see that happening. But if Sean's desperate for a quarterback, he may go that route. I think the Vikings are the most likely team to move up because of two first-round picks here. And what happens once those four quarterbacks come off the board?
Okay, so let's break it down. We'll start with the top 10 picks. The first three off the board are obviously going to be Caleb Williams, and then we both think it's going to be Jaden Daniels going number two to Washington. Caleb will also go to the Bears at number one overall. And then at number three, we both also expect that the New England Patriots will be taking Drake May, another quarterback for their future. To your point about Minnesota, Mike, for those that don't know, Minnesota traded back into the first round to get a second first-round pick with the Houston Texans, sending 2 seconds over to Houston. So now they have not only the 11th overall pick in the draft, but they also have pick 23. That is pretty good ammunition to move up to that top five spot. It's a matter of this point of which team they move up with. Once again, those top three are basically set in stone. So the one team that could potentially take J.J. McCarthy, if he falls to them in that top 10, that like just
would
shines,
be the Giants.
Would be the Giants at pick six. So to do that, as you mentioned, they have to hop the Giants and get a top five pick, whether that's moving up with the Chargers, who are at pick five, or moving up with Arizona, who's at pick four. Now, we'll talk a little bit about it. Arizona's already got pick 27 in this draft. So for a team that needs a lot of pieces to rebuild that roster,
I think
it's pretty interesting that they could potentially get not only that 27th overall pick, but they could also get pick 11 and pick 23. So they would have three of the top 27 picks in this class. I think that makes a lot of sense. At the same time, if you're Arizona, do you take that route instead of taking Marvin Harrison Jr., the star receiver from Ohio State, probably the top prospect that's not a quarterback on the board? It would make sense either way for me. I think if you're Arizona, you have to at least consider moving down. Same thing with the Chargers. They're in a good move down spot. If they move down from, let's say, 5 to 11, we both think that Jim Harbaugh wants to take a tackle, an offensive tackle.
I think that's always been how he's built teams. If it's been in the NFL or in college football, he's built with guys up front. He's at the owner's meeting. First thing that comes out of his mouth is, man, I believe in building in the trenches.
So the draft starts at pick four, my opinion. So because if, you know, Minnesota trades up to pick four and they take J.J. McCarthy and the first four players off the board are, in fact, quarterback, you have to sit long and hard and think that you won't take Marvin Harrison Jr. at pick five if you're the Chargers, just based off of their current wide receiver core. Like,
and
that is,
I had to play that cat twice.
Yes, there's familiarity.
I know him. And so I've had to go up against Marvin Harrison Jr. three times. So I know how good of a wideout he is. But again, Jim has always – he's kind of got the Greek theory. Okay, the Greeks settled this years ago, so to speak. That was a George Young comment that, you know, if you got a chance to pick a really talented big man, a really talented smaller guy, you go with the big guy. And that's been Harbaugh's philosophy basically through his entire coaching career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're looking at the Chargers at pick five. If, in fact, you know, the Cardinals do stay pat and they say, we want Marvin Harrison Jr. and we'll still pick at pick 27, they don't need three first-round picks in this class, I would totally understand it. But then you're at the Chargers at pick five. I mean, what do you do at that point? Do you trade down? I think you do. I think that that's a good spot because even if you don't get Joe Alt, who would probably go at number seven to Tennessee, that's where he's mocked a lot. Like, that makes the most sense to me. They took Peter Skoronski last year, played him at left guard, and then you bring in Joe Alt, and you got your left tackle. You got the left side of your offensive line locked down for the next decade, right? And that's just kind of how we see it. They can still get a top-tier tackle, whether that be, you know, Olu Fashanu or Talisa Fuanga or maybe even Troy Fautanu if they want someone a little bit more versatile at pick 11. And then at pick 23, they can probably get still a really solid receiver option, maybe A.D. Mitchell from Texas later on. So it's a good spot for the Chargers to be in. I could see them trading down, Mike.
Also, too, that, I mean, nobody tells you the truth today, so to speak, about who they're really interested in. Is there a team there that is really interested in Malik Nabers? Because I think he becomes a bit of a wild card here. They've got some people on their draft boards who have Malik Nabers over Marvin Harrison Jr. Do they feel as though, hey, listen, if Harrison goes off the board at four, and somebody makes a move here with the Chargers, is that next move Malik Nabers possibly even going to Tennessee?
I think
because if Alt's there,
you think so? I don't know, Mike.
I gotta help Will Levis.
No, I understand. You paid a lot of money to Calvin Ridley in the offseason. You already have DeAndre Hopkins. I would understand potentially adding Malik or even Rome at that point if you are, you know, the Tennessee Titans. at the same time, their offensive line is so bad.
It's bad.
It's so bad. So I think that you do have to take the best tackle available. And at the same time, that might be the best prospect available. Mike, you have Joe Alt as your fifth overall guy on this big board. So if he's there at pick seven for, you know, Tennessee, that's not only the best player available, but it fits a clear need for them.
And what's funny is their GM at the owner's meeting, and again, sometimes what they tell you is not exactly the truth. They do lie. I hate to break it to you, but it is the truth. He talked about what will you be looking for in round one, and he said a playmaker.
Okay.
Okay? And so, man, that has opened up the door. Is what is he thinking? Is he thinking maybe that the Chargers keep that pick and pick Joe out?
I think that would almost be best case scenario at that point, especially if, you know, Minnesota does in fact trade up to the fourth overall pick with Arizona, because then Marvin Harrison Jr. is there at pick six for the Giants. And then you can take Malik Nabers at pick seven.
Because if Harrison's off the board and so is JJ, the Giants are going to pick Malik.
Oh, yeah, clearly. There's no doubt about it. I think that especially, you know, with how this top 10 is going to shape up, it gets a little bit more interesting after the top seven, I think, because at pick eight, I feel like the Falcons, it's not being talked about enough that they could be in a trade down spot.
I think that. If I'm them...
You're taking Dallas Turner. I understand. Like, you stay
no,
put.
No, here's my thing with that.
Okay.
If there's a team looking for a specific player, and that's always the case, you fall in love with someone.
Of course.
If it's an offensive lineman, or if they feel as though Roma Dunze is going to get picked by the Bears and that's who I want, I might decide to trade back three, four picks. Get me an extra selection and end up with either Dallas Turner or Jared Verse with that pick, and I get an extra selection.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's once again, the trade back spot for the Falcons is not really being talked about much. Because we've almost penciled in Roma Dunze going ninth overall to the Bears after they take Caleb Williams 101. It just makes the most sense for me, at least. Like, maybe you could take an offensive lineman, but I still think that Roma Dunze getting him, you know, you're quarterback of the future and a stud receiver on a rookie contract makes a lot of sense. But to your point, if a team maybe in the teens really likes Odunze and they want to jump the Bears to get him, that would be the spot to do it, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. And again, for Atlanta's, how much of a gap do you have between Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, and Latu? How big of a gap? Because if you're asking who's the best pass rusher, okay, not the best all-around player, who's the best pass rusher of the three?
People give different answers, Mike.
I think most of them will tell you Latu. Now, again, he's got to pass the physical part for me.
Latu was medically retired at Washington before he went to UCLA.
He flunked a couple of physicals, not just one, a couple.
Latu is not the most athletic of the bunch.
He's the technically best.
He is the technically exactly correct. He's the guy that really scares you from a technician standpoint. I really like Leiatu Latu. I think that he probably falls a little bit. I would be surprised. Maybe,
Rams.
You know, like say
Rams.
Yes, the Rams make the most sense for me at pick 19 if he falls down that part. I think that LA runs to the podium and they're super excited about the pick. Jared Verse and Dallas Turner, we've both kind of expected to go
close between the two
in the top 15 picks, I would say, maybe even the top 13. So you're looking at maybe, you know, if they don't have that big of a gap between Dallas Turner and Jared Verse, maybe they do trade down to the early teens. If, let's say, I don't know, like 13, Oakland or the Raiders want Roma Dunze. I'm just kind of spitballing right now. They move up and go get him. I think that to your point about the quarterbacks, Mike, it's interesting to see what happens after those top four come off the board, because where does Michael Penix go and where does Bo Nix go? I still think that they're both first-round picks. So, I mean, maybe there's a lot of buzz about Bo Nix going to Denver.
I can't see that where the Broncos sit.
They're
now
at 12 right now.
I can't see picking him 12. I really can't. But there's always one pick in the top dozen of 13. That's, you say, what? He got picked that high? I remember when John Ross, who's, man, he could run, but he couldn't catch the ball well. He got picked in the top 10, and we sitting there like, what? How did this happen that he gets picked that high in the draft? And then at the 10th spot with the Jets, because I think if you're trying to appease Aaron Rodgers, and I think they are, then they go on Brock Bowers here. But if you're looking into the telescope instead of the microscope, you might take a look at an offensive lineman here. Because Tyron Smith, I mean, he's not the youngest guy in the world. Now, he's still good when he's healthy, but he's had some injuries. He's in his 30s, not quite the same guy. And you may get a chance to pick here the second-best offensive lineman in a really rich class.
So the thing about the Jets that intrigues me, Mike, to your point about Tyron Smith, it's not just Tyron. Morgan Moses is not the youngest guy in the world either, and he's slotted to be their starting right tackle. If either one of those guys gets hurt, the Jets are in big trouble. They're in big, big trouble. So I think that they still go offensive line here. I know that this is the first kind of spot where we're thinking, okay, Brock Bowers could be the guy, right, for the Jets. And I could see that being the pick. But I still think that where the Jets are on the offensive line, you saw how banged up they got last year up there. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was down in the first four plays of the season.
And that wasn't that's a non-contact injury.
It was a freak injury. Yeah. But if their offensive line gets banged up again, and Aaron Rodgers coming off of that severe injury is not going to be comfortable back there, Mike.
Yeah, and so then I think from 10 to probably 18, 19, that's when the run's going to happen on offensive linemen.
Definitely.
Where you're going to see Fuagu get selected, J.C. Latham get selected, Olufoshano get selected, Troy Fatano, who I'm a big fan of. Charlie, I told you this. If Troy was a 6'5" offensive tackle, he would never get to 10. He would not get to 10.
Fautanu's awesome, and I think it's his biggest strength is definitely his versatility. That he can play multiple spots on the offensive line. That is a plug-and-play guy. If you have a need, and that's why I think Fautanu may not be the best offensive lineman available at pick 10. Maybe you have Fuanga or Fashanu higher on your list, but for a Jets team at pick 10 that they've dealt with so many injuries on the offensive line, Fautanu makes a lot of sense. It's kind of an underrated spot for him.
Yeah, and he's always played on the left side. He's played a couple games at left guard, but really played most of his career at the left tackle position. Right. He's the most technically sound of any of the linemen in this draft class who play tackle. The best. Now, he's 6'3¾". If he was 6'4¾", he would never get to 10.
No.
Never get there. But some teams have a certain deal. You got to be a certain size, height, that sort of thing. But just watch the guy. Ain't nobody beats him.
So just recapping our kind of discussion here, Mike, the top 10 picks are really fascinating. We know 1, 2, 3 is going to be quarterback. And then 4 and 5 are kind of where the draft starts.
That's the hot spot.
Because that's where someone's going to try and trade up to go get J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback from Michigan, whether it's moving up with the Cardinals at pick 4, and then Arizona gets 3 first-round picks from Minnesota if they do that, or if it's the Chargers moving down from pick 5. Either one makes totally sense to me. And then you move down. At that point, you're looking at the Giants. If no team does move up, they're taking J.J. at 6. If not, they're going wide receiver. At 7, we talked a little bit about receiver or offensive tackle for the Tennessee Titans. At 8, the Falcons could be a potential move down spot. That's something to keep an eye on. If not, they stay put and get the best defensive player available. At 9, Roma Dunze, once again, that makes the most sense to both of us that he goes the wide receiver from Washington to the Chicago Bears. And then at 10, that's the first landing spot for Brock Bowers that makes the most sense. At the same time, I still think they go offensive line.
And there's a lot of them. And I think,
yeah.
And the run starts 10 and beyond. The run starts on offensive tackles, and they're going to peel off real, real quickly. That's our Inside the NFL Draft segment. It's brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. We'll be back. And we come back, we'll be our Bet365 triple option feature. Myself, Charlie Long, Steve Geller, right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike DeTillo along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. And it's our Bet365 triple option feature of stories of the day. Steven, you go first.
I'm going to touch on the Pelicans game last night against the Lakers. Obviously, they went down 110-106 in the play-in tournament matchup. We got a game on Friday, super important against the Kings once again. But after the game yesterday, head coach Willie Green was not happy with officiating.
I don't feel like we've gotten a great whistle all season. That's how I feel when I watch the games. We're one of the teams that dominate the paint night in and night out. We have a physical dominant force in Zion, along with others. And it just seems like we're not getting those calls.
Now, Coach isn't complaining about the Lakers getting 29 free throws, but the issue with him, the Pels only shot 15 after they dominated inside. The Pels had a 62-36 advantage when it came to points in the paint. We've talked about this, I think, a lot throughout the season. It just seems not only Zion Williamson, but the entire team just doesn't seem to get the whistle from the referees. I don't know how that changes or when it will.
Ain't nothing going to change on Zion, LeBron.
No, we know he's getting those calls.
He's always going to get it. But listen, that wasn't something invented when LeBron first hit the NBA.
No, right.
Man, I saw that with Larry Bird and Magic and Michael Jordan. They got the calls. I mean, and so with a superstar player, he's going to get that part of it. That's always been a part of this game. It's always been a part of it, but you know, I think it's much more seen today because now every game basically is on television one way or another. Charlie?
Yeah, and I'm looking for the exact stat, so I'll come back to it later. The Lakers' free throw disparity is just ridiculous. It's like double that of the next closest team. I don't understand it. But anyways, guys, my story of the day, USA basketball team for Paris 2024 Olympics has been finalized. I'm going to read off some of these names to you. Bam Adebayo, Devin Booker, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Anthony Edwards, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Halliburton, Drew Holiday, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, and Jason Tatum, guys. So that is the team that USA Basketball will field for the 2024 Paris Olympics. A lot of old faces in there. I mean, a couple new guys sprinkled in with Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Halliburton, but guys like Drew and LeBron and Kawhi, AD, like been there, done that, KD and Curry as well. It's almost like the last ride for some of these all-time NBA greats playing for their country at USA Basketball.
Guys, 25 years ago today, the Saints picked Ricky Williams in the draft, traded up, basically gave up an entire draft class and a pick the following year, too, to move up in round one. Buddy and I were doing Draft Fest, but we had known from people in the Saints organization that said, hey, listen, we don't really believe the Colts will pick Edgerrin James, but if they do, we've got a deal in place with Washington that we're going to trade for Ricky Williams. And it was as soon as the Colts picked it, I made the comment on the air, that seals the deal. I actually heard that driving home. It was on ESPN call with Ricky Williams going to the Saints, and we get Mike Ditka up on stage, and Mike, his deal is, well, tomorrow I get to play golf all day. I got no picks. I'm ready to go play golf. But Mike really thought that Ricky was going to be his version in New Orleans of Walter Payton. And he was willing to give up all those selections to bring him in. And I've never seen a crowd react that way to a selection. They had people, guys, I'm telling you, that were driving down Airline Drive, that were pulling off to the side and then pulling into the parking lot. We were doing it at the Saints facility at that time, mm-hmm. outside. People, going nuts with that Ricky Williams. And my only thing with that is, man, look what you gave up to get him.
Yikes.
That was a big, big haul. But Mike's first comment is, man, I'm going to play golf tomorrow. He said, Mike, your uncle's going to play golf? I said, well, he plays every Sunday. He's like, well, I'll be there too to go play golf. Didn't have any more selections.
Who was the GM then, Mike?
Bill Kuharik. But they did what Mike wanted. They did what Mike did. If Mike wanted a player, Mike got that player if he was there. Because Mike sort of took over the draft in a lot of cases. He really did. It was his call on what to do. And so, Bill had the title of general manager, but come draft day, it was Ditka who had the final say and the only say that mattered, so to speak. But 25 years ago today, Ricky Williams in a trade with Washington, the Saints picked Ricky Williams in round one. And, man, Ricky came out of college at Texas. That was as big a name. You're talking about from the running back position that you hadn't seen in a while, but then the Colts pick Edgerrin James. I think they made the right choice there. Man, Edgerrin was an unbelievable back for the Colts. Really, really was. But 25 years ago today, the Saints picking Ricky Williams. That's our Bet365 triple option feature. We're finishing up here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 when we come back. And we got a little bit more to offer you in our number two right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here in our number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to tell everybody we're just 8 days away, but it's Saints NFL Draft. And Saints fans, on that Thursday, starting at 4 o'clock, Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, they'll be at the Saints camp. It'll be our draft preview show with head coach Dennis Allen, executive vice president, general manager Mickey Loomis, offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak, defensive coordinator Joe Woods, Jeff Ireland, Mike Parrington, the whole crew of assistant coaches and chief scouts will be there to talk about it leading up until 6 o'clock when we will crank it up here on the Big 870. Live from Las Cruces Tex-Mex Restaurant, we'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this news break.